You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everyone. Well, you know, we're on this odd schedule here at The Takeaway, right, Adora?
I mean, oh,
we,
yeah. You
know, we get up really, really early. We go to bed at strange sorts of hours. We have, shall we say, sleep issues. But for generally, for the population generally, sleep is kind of the daily grim reaper. It's something you can't get out of. You have to address the sleep gods in some way. How many hours of sleep do you get? Is it 8? Is it 5? Is it 3? Do you have special tricks for cheating the sleep gods? I got to drive home from Boston to New York later today, and I don't know how I'm going to do it. Do you have a power nap strategy you'd like to share? I really need your help out there. 877-8-MY-TAKE. Call us or mytake at thetakeaway.org. We're talking about sleep strategy, sleep tricks. Wasn't there a band called Sleep Trick? No, it was Cheap Trick.
No, I don't think
anyway.
So.
We'd like to ask Jim Muir what his sleep strategy is, but there's more important things to talk about with him. Joining us now is Jim Muir, the BBC Baghdad correspondent, to talk about details that are emerging today on a draft agreement to extend the U.S. mandate in Iraq. According to the BBC, U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates is briefing members of Congress about a deal that would extend the U.S. presence in Iraq until 2011, but would then start a pullout of troops from Iraqi urban areas in the middle of next year. The deal still has to pass muster with the Iraqi parliament, and there have been tense discussions all along as this status of force agreement, as it's called, is facing a end-of-year deadline because the U.N. mandate that authorizes U.S. troops in Iraq runs out at that time. Jim Muir, thanks for joining us.
Most welcome, and I had 2 hours last night, in case you're wondering.
2 hours, thanks. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for sharing that. Maybe we'll have some time to talk about your sleep tricks, but let's get to the details of this status of force agreement as far as we know it at this point.
Well, as you probably know, the negotiations kicked off early this year, and there were some sticking points. One was over the timeline. The Iraqi government very much wanted to have some kind of timeline in there, and it does have that, in getting U.S. forces out of Iraqi cities by June of next year and out of the country altogether. And I think we're talking here about combat troops by the end of 2011. There are also a number of other issues that the Iraqis regarded as key to their sovereignty issues, such as if, for example, American troops were to misbehave when they're off duty, off base, who has jurisdiction over them? Would they face Iraqi courts or what? Well, the Iraqis got that little concession out of the Americans, but it's a bit of a cosmetic one, I think, because I think the U.S. military would regard any of their soldiers in this country at any time as being on mission and therefore not subject to Iraqi jurisdiction. Mm. However, that's been finessed. There's a lot of other detail in it. It's a very detailed agreement, but Iraqi negotiators say this is it. This is the final document. The compromises have been stretched as far as the two sides can go. So it's either take it or leave it at this stage.
A couple of details, Jim. How are the subcontractors, the military subcontractors, dealt with in this agreement? Is it addressed at all, or is it just a gray area?
It is addressed in the sense of they are lumped in with Iraqi military forces in terms of should they be kind of off base and off mission and misbehave, they would be subject to Iraqi law. It is still a bit of a gray area because, as you probably know, the Iraqis did produce legislation that would bring contractors, security contractors, under Iraqi law, because there have been a number of fairly notorious cases where Iraqi civilians have been killed by what they regard, or the Iraqi authorities regard, as trigger-happy private security details. And that is still, I think, a bit of a gray area.
So how does this agreement reveal in any sense the military strategy that the Pentagon has going forward in Iraq? Or is this mostly a political deal insofar as you can tell?
It is a very detailed, basically military deal, and it foresees the kind of transition that that everybody has in mind, whereby U.S. forces would be phased out of direct frontline combat roles and more into logistics, training, backup, air power, heavy firepower, and so on when needed. So it is that kind of transition that seems to be built into this accord. It's been a very, very hard wrangle, this accord. The Americans have, I think I'm right in thinking, thinking at least 80 other SOFAs, that status of forces agreements, in other countries, but none of them where they're in a combat role. Mm. So this has proven a very tricky one, especially with the Iraqi government feeling under pressure to safeguard those sovereignty items and to assert itself as an independent government.
And in some real sense, this dovetails with the emerging notion that things are actually improving in the security situation on the ground in Iraq, as David Petraeus, the general, went off to CENTCOM, and there's been a change of leadership in Iraq. It seems to be consistent with the good news that's been emerging from Iraq. True?
Yes, no question about it, but nobody's complacent at all. Yes, all the statistics are down, the numbers of attacks of all kinds, the numbers of casualties of all kinds, but you yet to get that sense of a real country pulling together at the center. A lot of the legislation that's supposed to be nation building is held up. There's a lot of bickering going on, a lot of fragmentation in the political arena, and I have to say, it's by no means an assured item that this agreement will go through on the Iraqi side. There's very strong opposition. There's going to be a big demonstration tomorrow, that's Saturday, by Muqtada Sadr's supporters, your grassroots Shiites, who are against any continuing American presence. Iran is huffing and puffing on the borders. They're very hostile as well. So, as I say, it's by no means a done deal that it will actually get approved by the Iraqi side. It has to go through parliament, and there are a lot of people there who will want to tear bits of it off it.
Jim Muir, before we go, as Middle Eastern correspondents, both of us, we've spent a fair amount of time in tents and trying to grab sleep here and there while doing stories that are more or less 24 hours. Any sleep strategy you'd like to share with me? I never got a chance to ask you when we were together over in Iran and Lebanon.
I'm afraid I'm one of those people who just hasn't got a very good strategy. I tend to, when I'm really having to work really, really hard, just to forget about sleep and then hope I'll catch up later. But I very rarely do. So I'm often running on empty on that one.
So, Jim, you are part android, I guess it's fair to say.
Sometimes one goes on to autopilot. In fact, yeah, I have been described as an automaton, yep.
Jim Muir, BBC Baghdad correspondent, thanks for joining us on any level, Iraqi strategy and sleep deprivation, any of those beats. We love you. Jim Muir, thanks so much. And now, headlines from Femi Okeh.
Thanks, John. Just coming up to 29 minutes past the hour.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.